This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasodi. Spinal muscular atrophy, it's a rare genetic condition that causes progressive muscle weakness. And we have two mothers in the studio with us, Yap Suki. She has a son who's at the age of 9 who has spinal muscular atrophy type 2. Now, there are four types of SMA. And also joining us is Sharatul Azma Shamsuddin. She's better known as Katsha. And Katsha has a daughter who's about 20 years, give and take. We'll find a little bit more about her, with SMA type 2, who recently graduated with a degree in graphic design. And Katsha, unfortunately, has another daughter who has passed away from this same disease. So they attended something called the Cure SMA Conference in the US very recently in Anaheim in Disneyland. And they're going to be here to share their findings and thoughts on how to improve spinal muscular atrophy and support in Malaysia. So also, this is, by the way, our Brainwaves episode 27. And joining us, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, our neurogeneticist. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Hi, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Good to have you all here today. You want to just explain to us what this condition really is, Dr. Azlina? It's a genetic wasting disease. Mm-hmm. Would I be correct when I say that? And, you know, it is supposed to be a rare condition, a rare disease, for an example. Is it? How rare is it in Malaysia?
It's, worldwide, it's thought to occur in about 1 to 6,000 to about 10,000 births. But I think in Malaysia, it's thought to be a little bit more common, and perhaps you can say something about that later, given the research that is currently being done in Malaysia. And about 1 in 50 people are carriers of this, of the gene that you can pass on to your children. And spinal muscular atrophy, basically what happens is they have a problem with the motor neurons, or the neurons that send the signals to the muscles. And over time, because the muscles are not being properly activated, they start to lose their function, and then you get overall loss of muscle strength and weakness.
Okay, all right. So you want to share your journey with us, Suki. I mean, you have a 9-year-old mm-hmm. who has spinal muscular atrophy, and he's got SMA type 2. You want to just share that journey with us? When was he diagnosed?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, how did that happen?
Well, when Brandon was born, he was actually having pneumonia, and he was actually admitted to ICU. At that time, it was just pneumonia. Nobody suspected anything. At 6 months old, he was still not turning over on his, you know, tummy and all that. Having my son, elder son Jaden, who's already 12 years old now, we could see that he was not achieving the milestones that Jaden had. And hence, we actually did lots of physiotherapy. We went to two pediatric doctors, and they say, oh, maybe, you know, hypotonia, and therefore maybe the boys are a bit slower in terms of development. And after 6 months of physiotherapy, there was still no improvement. So Brandon was diagnosed when he was 1 year old. However, when he was diagnosed, the doctor told us that he probably couldn't pass 2 years old because the symptoms very much show like he was a type 1 baby. And this weekend, Brandon is celebrating his 9 years old.
Wow.
9th birthday. Yeah.
Fantastic. And, and what got him past that 2 year mark?
Really, with God's blessing and also lots of care, following the good protocols in terms of caring for SMA, as in what we have learned through in Facebook, there's a standard care for SMA, which is taking care of the breathing, movement, and also the diet. These are the things that actually helped him to be where he is today.
Okay, so he's 9 years old today.
Yes.
What about you, Katsha? Both your daughters have SMA.
Yes.
You want to share that journey with us?
As you all know, that Aina now is she's going to be 24 end of the year, and my younger one is still around. We call her Adik.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she should be 22. Also, end of December, because
okay.
the difference is just 1 year gap. That's
sure.
the best thing in my life, because actually I wanted to be the same birthday, you know, together of them. Aina was diagnosed when she was about 2.5 years old, which is in 1998. when I was told about the SMA, I have no clue at all what is SMA. I don't really understand what is SMA. And when I asked the doctor, is there any patient that I can refer to or any other families that I can talk to? The answer is no. So back to 1998, there's no Instagram, Facebook. Mm-hmm. So the only information that I can get is through reading. But the only thing that clicked to my mind is there is no treatment for SMA. The only thing that we can do is continue to do physiotherapies. So start from that day, we start follow up with the doctors and continue to do physiotherapies until at the age of, I think, 3 or 4, I stopped. Because it's very tiring for us to go back every month to go to the hospital. And then the routine is like the same thing. Mm-hmm. The physiotherapy is also like the same thing that we can do it at home.
And Aina was what, 2 years old at that time?
2.5 years old.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was it a long process in terms of diagnosing? Did they know immediately she had SMA?
It took us about almost 1.5 years to get the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Because from the private hospital, they push us to the government hospital and we could turn around like a ball, from the orthopedic, from neuro, and then end up at the PICS neurologist. And I think through the biopsy, she was diagnosed with SMA type 2.
How long did it take for Brandon to be diagnosed?
Brandon, when at 1 year old, actually pushed the doctor to do a test. And within 1 month, we actually got the result. It was just through a blood test. So 8 years ago, actually, blood test was just the test that's needed to be done.
Right, so we've come a long...
No muscle biopsy.
We've come a long way since 1998 then. Dr. Azlina, there are 4 types of spinal muscular atrophy, type 1, 2, 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And all Brandon, Aina and her sibling have the type 2. You want to just explain that? Mm-hmm. Is type 1 more severe?
Yes, so type 1 is the most severe form. Normally, they have a life expectancy of around 2 years old. And what happens is the genetic cause of SMA is actually very interesting. It is controlled, the severity of the symptoms is actually controlled not just by one gene, but actually by 2 genes. So if you have the most severe form, what happens is you have a complete loss of one of the genes, this gene called SMN1. And if you have a complete loss of SMN1, then you have type 1. And what happens is the cell just... The SMN gene makes a very important protein which is required to keep the muscle healthy and motor neurons healthy. And if you don't have that protein, what happens is then the motor neurons then begin to die. And then that then has a knock-on effect on the muscles. And so then you see the muscle then dying. So that's why they call it muscular atrophy. Okay, and then for type 2, what happens is you have only one copy of this SMN1 gene, but then you have a backup from the second gene, which is known as SMN2. And what's really interesting is actually one of the SMN1 genes actually converts into the SMN2 gene. And you now have a little bit more of the protein that's being made. It's not being made to a sufficient level to stop the harmful effects, but it can help to maintain the survival of the motor neurons a little bit longer. And then in SMN3, what happens is then you have more of this second, you have more copies of this second SMN2 gene. And then, of course, then you make more of this backup copy of these proteins, and that helps the motor neurons to survive longer, and so on and so forth. So this second gene actually modifies the severity of the symptoms that the patient would have.
And we do understand that this is a gene that comes from both parents. Mm. That's interesting that you say 1 in 50 of us are carriers of this gene.
Yes, that's right.
SMN.
Of the deletion in this SMN1 gene, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you can imagine, everybody knows, at least, you don't realize it, but you know someone, or you may yourself be a carrier of defective gene. And it's just by chance that you meet and you have children. And actually, even if you are both carriers, it doesn't mean that all your children will have SMA. Actually, the chances are 25% that one of your children will have SMA, and then 50% of your children will be carriers themselves, and then about another 25% will be normal, so they're not affected.
Okay. All right, but both parents must carry this gene.
Yes, and as a carrier, you yourself won't show any symptoms.
Yes.
So most of the time, you have no idea at all. And so that's why I think, you know, when you talk with the families, it's a complete shock to them because they had no idea.
That you actually have it. So can you find out? I mean, I don't want everyone to run now and start figuring out whether you carry this gene or not. But, you know, what have you done? I mean, are you, you know, you want to have more children? Is there a concern? Have you done the gene test?
Well, for me, it was that I couldn't... The genetic testing is available. Let's say, for example, couples who are planning to get married, they can actually go to, can ask the gynae and say, can I do a carrier testing? Just like thalassemia carrier testing. So because Edmund's family has a case, history in thalassemia. So before we got married, Edmund and I actually went for thalassemia carrier testing. And I'm not affected and I'm not a carrier. But then I wish at that time the doctor could have told us that there is also SMA carrier testing. Because the way thalassemia and SMA is...
Inherited
is the same.
I see.
So that is why we do actually encourage newlywed couples or couples who are planning to get married to get tested, because all of us carry 5 to 8 types of defective genes.
Yes, well, we're all carriers of some form of rare disease.
Yeah.
But whether or not, you know, like I said, it's chances of you also, your partner also being a carrier for that one, and which egg and sperm fertilize and you know. But yes, we're all carriers of some sort of...
Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes you think about a lot of things now, doesn't it? Kasha, tell us about your other daughter.
Akila?
Yes.
Akila was officially diagnosed when she was 11 years old. She was doing quite okay after, I think after 2 years. She's free from hospitalization for about 6 or 2 years. But she had a bad attack in, I think, 2009 when she was at Standard 6. I think she was sitting for her UPSR. So that is like a new chapter for us, because all this while she was, both of them are very healthy. So I forgot totally about SMA. Really, I just ignore
SMA. Put it
SMA.
In the past.
Yes, I think what is it? Just they are not walking, so what, okay? Because other than that, they are okay. So we just live happily until that incident. So she was first hospitalized in government hospital. That was our first experience at a government hospital. And it's the beginning of everything. And they did a test. So doctor gave us 5 years to live. I didn't share it with her. I think she understands. She can feel it. No, because they are both very smart girls. But the way... I don't know, but how would you feel if, like, people tell you that you got only 5 years to live and she's only 11 that time?
And is she the one who passed on?
Yes.
And when was this?
In 2013, 19 August 2013.
She was. How old was she?
She was 15 years old, 7 months and 19 days.
Okay. Right. When you say attack, Kasha, what do you mean by an attack?
She couldn't breathe. She couldn't breathe. She had difficulty of breathing because she called me from school, said that I cannot breathe, Ma. Can you come and take me home? Because that is what usually we do. Like, if she's not feeling well, she can just tell the teacher, and the teacher will call me. So I took her back and then said, it doesn't look like normal, you know. She looked very different. So that's why we took her to the emergency room. And they don't know what is wrong with her. Because the doctor have no idea what is SMA. Okay, I also don't know how to explain to the doctor what is SMA. And they start doing all sort of thing, you know. I can't remember, but she just very weak.
So like you said, Suki, the standard care to look after breathing, movement and diet are absolutely crucial.
Because in SMA, actually what happens is it's not just the leg muscles, it's not just the hand muscles. Gradually what will happen is all the muscles will also be affected. So in breathing, you know, if you can imagine when you want to take a breath, you actually, the muscles in between the rib cage, right? That also needs to compress and contract and expand. And then also your diaphragm. So if that's not able to function normally, then, you know, that's when the respiratory difficulties come in. And also coughing, right? There's a lot of choking that happens.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So pneumonia is basically the cause of death to most of the children, when especially type 1 children and, you know, even in some of the adults. Once you have a pneumonia, you have difficulty. I mean, once you cough, they can't cough very well, and therefore there's secretion, and it causes pneumonia. Mm. So that is when we have to really make sure that our kid actually, a slight cough and flu, it's the care we really need to pay more attention and do the necessary chest therapy, suctioning. Right now we have, and we also support with the cough assist machine, and that is very crucial in terms of.
So tell us about Brandon. Brandon goes to school. He's, you know, is he able to walk? What sort of, can you explain Brandon and how he leads his life every
Brandon
day?
Brandon is a very happy and cheerful boy.
I'm sure he is.
He talks nonstop. He's a very positive boy. I learned so much from him. Brandon was also diagnosed with dyslexia at 6 years old. So when we actually approached the school at 5 years old, or the, you know, a few primary schools, we were rejected because he had a feeding tube attached when we went to see all the principals, and they actually said they couldn't manage a child like that. So we were turned down by 3 to 4 schools. And by 6 years old, he was still not accepted, and we know that he's also dyslexic, and therefore we decided to actually homeschool him and support him with a reading program in an enrichment center. What we do is very strict regime in terms of cough assist in the morning, chest therapy, very good care, yearly flu vaccination for the whole family, not just for him, and physiotherapy, aqua therapy, standing for weight bearing, and what else? In terms of diet, we have to watch very closely when he eats because swallowing is affected. They can choke, and choking can, you know, cost them their life. So basically this is what we do. So it's a lot to manage, and it's not easy, but it's possible.
And you've dedicated very much to the two boys.
Yes.
Yeah, looking after both of them.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's they're both great
moms. I'm sure. I'm going to come back to Katsha in a short while to talk about Aina and how she's doing. We'll come back and find out more about spinal muscular atrophy. If you have a question for either the two mums or Dr. Aslina, the neurogeneticist, give us a call. The number is 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Aslina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, in the studio with us for our Brainwave series, and we're discussing spinal muscular atrophy. Joining us also, two mums, Yap Sukyi, whose son is Brandon. Brandon is 9, who has spinal muscular atrophy, and Sharatul Azma Shamsuddin, who, you know, we refer to as Katsha, who has two children, Aina and Akila. Unfortunately, we lost Akila some time ago, and to spinal muscular atrophy. But Aina is, you know, she's doing well. She's 24 years old now. Yeah. It sort of gives a lot of hope for a lot of people, because you imagine that with SMA, you know, you would lose your children much earlier on in life. So, you know, Brandon 9 and Aina at 24. It's just amazing. It's simply amazing. So if you're wondering what it is, spinal muscular atrophy is a condition that occurs when two mutant genes are inherited, one from each parent. And that that impairs the production of a protein called SMN. And this deficiency sort of disables patients by killing critical cells in the spinal cord. So as Dr. Azlina mentioned, the motor neurons and the messaging sent to the muscles are affected.
That's right.
And as a result, you know, your muscles...
You can't control your muscles anymore.
That's right. And... as Suki mentioned, you know, the standard care for people with SMA are you need to look after their breathing, their movement, as well as their diet, which are really, really crucial to all of this. Suki, can you just shed a little bit more light about the country? In Malaysia, I mean, you've got a lot of support groups going, support group going for SMA children and babies. What's the situation like? I mean, are we diagnosing fast enough? Do we have proper support for parents who have children with SMA?
Right now, what we know from the research that's been done by Dr. Cheng, a geneticist in HKL, that one baby is born every 2 weeks. That is at least one baby born every 2 weeks.
That's not very rare. That's yes. not very rare, Dr. Azlina. I mean, one in two children every week, every, did you say?
One child every two weeks.
2 weeks.
So that's two per month.
Two a month.
Yeah.
So globally, it's around about one in 10,000 newborns we have. Yes. So,
yeah, so in Malaysia, you, of course, we know that in rural, you know, areas, you actually can have undiagnosed or misdiagnosed or, you know, parents don't even know, or doctors couldn't identify the symptoms, because the symptoms are similar across a lot of other rare diseases like hypotonia and not you know, achieving milestones, like they're not able to kick, they have very weak cries and all that. But one thing that is quite obvious in SMA patient is tongue fasciculation, where the tongue actually shivers. So that is one of the symptoms that you can see. And most of the cases are only identified when a child is affected with pneumonia. And that's when the doctors say, hey, maybe this kid has got SMA, because they can't cough. Their cough is so weak and their movement is very weak. So that's where that triggers the pediatrician or the doctors to actually say, let's do a test on this kid.
Okay, but if muscles are affected already and wasting away, yes. isn't that an indication at all?
Well, I mean, there's
to further figure out what's actually going on.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of overlap with other forms of
muscular dystrophy,
congenital disorders. Yes, okay. So if the doctor is just not familiar with it, you know, it just doesn't come into their radar. You know, they, you know, we spoke about it being a rare disorder, and yes, going by the numbers, it's one of the more common rare disorders. But if the doctor hasn't been sort of exposed enough, you know, hasn't seen many children with it, they wouldn't really be that familiar. So they might have misdiagnosed it as something else.
Okay. Okay. Brandon was suspected to have mitochondria instead of...
Mitochondria.
Yes, mitochondrial disorder.
Because he was not gaining weight. I mean, for the whole year, he gained only 100 gram. So instead of SMA... That was the first suspicion, but it came out to be SMA. So we did a test for about 10 to 15 conditions, and to nail it down to the right one, it needs a lot of experience from the geneticist.
Right. Yes. I mean, the mitochondria, I remember there's a three-parent baby solution now for children born with mitochondria defects. We have a question from Dr. Kyrie. There you go. Doctors are asking. Fantastic. Does SMA attack only children with a certain age?
No. Basically, it's a genetic condition, so it is in us. But when does it show the symptoms? It depends on how many copies of SMN and SMN2 copies. Yeah. So it can happen when your child is 4 years old or 5 years old. We also have adults with SMA who show symptoms when they were teenagers, and some of them are actually in their 20s. So when they're late, the late onset SMA patients, there are a lot of misdiagnosis with other muscular dystrophy conditions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're fine until a certain age when they're teenagers, then the muscles start to waste away.
Yeah, because actually it's amazing that the body can cope with some degree of loss. So even in Parkinson's disease, you only start to see the symptoms after 70% of the brain cells have already died, you know. So the body is, you know, before you show the symptoms, it's trying to, you know, cope. And also the person themselves unknowingly may modify their behavior. So they may feel that, oh, you know, I'm not very good with running. So they don't, you know, so maybe they're not so much of a runner in school and they think it's just not their thing. Yes. But then gradually, then later when they start to develop SMA and then they sort of look back and they go, oh, maybe, you know, that might explain certain things in my childhood and early adulthood.
Okay, so you have patients who can actually walk, and one of the symptoms is very hard to get up when you squat, and difficulty in climbing staircase. You keep falling and things. These are some of the symptoms.
Okay, we're discussing spinal muscular atrophy. If you have a question for the two mums or Dr. Azlina, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Kaisha, you want to tell us about Aina? She's 24 now. I mean, 24 is, you know, fantastic. How is she doing?
Oh, she's going good. But yesterday she had a bit... she's not feeling well. She's supposed to be here today with us, but she can't make it today. I think she misses us because we were in California for 10 days. I think that was the longest time I left her alone with the father and the grandparents.
I'm sure she's listening to us now.
I hope she's doing well. She's hope she's rest. We're actually very proud of her. Very proud of her. We didn't expect her to make it until what she has achieved now. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's actually a very tough journey for us. But God bless her. She never complained of anything. She will try her best. Even if she can't do anything, she will try. She will try her best. If she can't do anything, she just get quiet. Okay, Ma, I tried my best. But sorry, I can't do it.
She's a graphic artist.
She graduated in graphic design.
Yes, she loves arts very much. I think she took that from me. I took that from my father.
There's a lot of stealing going on here. And is she out at working already, or does she work at home?
She work at home. Home base. She's doing freelance.
Chonteng by Aina.
Graphic design. She has her own Instagram. It's Chonteng by Aina. Mm-hmm. And she's busy. She's busy, you know. She has a job, but I try to minimize her work, you know, because I don't want her to get too focused on her, that she cannot rest. That is where she gets all the symptoms, you know. Mm-hmm. When she gets tired, not enough rest, and then she will start to cough. And that is not a good sign.
Okay, so coughing seems to be the symptom to look out for.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Kaisha, and your husband? I mean, you've come a long way with both the girls.
Yes.
Uh-huh. How did you cope with it on a personal level?
very hard to say, but... but... my husband is very supportive. Even he's very quiet, but we can understand each other. You know, when we have two, we decided two is enough. Okay, we decided not to have more children. Okay, because I'm worried. I just want to focus with these two girls. You know, we want to give the best for our children. And then even my husband carry Aina and her sister up to school, third floor. You know, during the school days. And we follow them very rare. School trip, friends' birthday party, we join them everywhere. I mean, if they swim, we swim. If they run, we run. Everywhere we go together. We do it all together. I think the key point is we are happy. Mm. We're happy and we appreciate each other. They never complain. They never ask me why I cannot walk, Ma. They never say that. And I didn't even tell them what is SMA. But now Aina is my... she do her own research. Ma, I know more than you know.
Why did you not want to tell them?
Because I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared because if the more I know, the more worried I am. So I just want to know the good thing only. So the rest of the thing, let's leave it. Leave it to the God. Okay, we have to move on. If I think all the positive thing, I cannot do anything. So my principle is very simple. You're just happy, just enjoy your life, appreciate whatever you have, go on.
Lesson learned. Thank you.
Less stress.
It's we have a message here. Someone who says, I just want to say both mothers on the show are very strong and thank you for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
As someone who is new to knowing what SMA is about, what should I, as part of the public, look out for to help people with SMA?
Good question.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things that you can know. You can help. You can look out. Let's say if you have any friends or people you know that looks like they have the symptoms, you can reach out to, you can share with them that there is a possibility of that is SMA, or you can refer to the doctors. Right now, actually, SMA has changed so much in the last 3 years since the there is now a treatment for SMA patients that has been approved in 2016. It's called Spinraza. It's available in about 50 countries in the world. However, in Malaysia, we still do not get that treatment. And we have been actually advocating for the access of treatment for SMA patients in Malaysia. There's a lot of support and a lot of that from the public. Sorry, I'm getting emotional. We need a lot of support from all stakeholders, including the public, to let them know that our children deserve to be treated. Now, at the moment, because of the cost of the drug, which is not cheap, but then it's available, we think that we actually want the treatment to be available for the patients.
I think, whenever we speak to some officials, and there's always this, thing that they say, it's very expensive. But, we also feel that, okay, right, it is expensive. Well, you kind of have to get over the price tag, and it's a problem that needs to be solved. And the government, in a way, also needs to think of a legitimate solution rather than just sort of throwing it back and saying, I'm sorry, it's too expensive.
And this is gene therapy, Dr. Azlina?
Spinraza is not gene therapy, but it's a slightly different type of treatment. So what it's called, what it does is that it converts the second gene that we have. So it's wonderful. Actually, nature is wonderful because it gives us this backup gene that in science we can use to help these patients clinically. And so what happens is that the drug actually can makes this second gene produce more of this protein. And if you make more of this protein, then, of course, you extend the survival of the cells that send signals to the muscles. So that's what Spinraza does. And that's actually, as you were saying, that was actually approved in December 2016. More recently, there's been a second treatment, and that's called Zolgensma. And that one is gene therapy. So in the case of Spinraza, you would need it, you would need to get the dose for a number of times over the course of a year. That's right. So Zolgensma, you would only need it once because it's the way it works is that it actually makes your body make its own, right? It kind of kickstarts the production of the SMN. So you start to naturally make it. Whereas Spinraza, you would need to take the drug, the injection, a few times a year over the course of your life.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. If you have gene therapy, you just, fix that problem with the protein of SMN.
Yes, once.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that was in the news recently, and I think some of the results have come back that it's actually really, really very promising. Same with Spinraza. I think in the Cure SMA, they had some of the findings. 88% of the children who are type 1, who normally wouldn't be able to walk, actually now they're walking. This is the real data that, they're showing from their studies. And, when families hear that and you think, why can't we get access? And I think that's really something that the SMA community is really fighting for. And I think, it's time that, we do something into the question, what can the public do? Throw your weight behind their voice.
Yeah. To the treating doctors, they always think that if your child can't walk, it's not worth treating because it's not a cure. There's not many rare disease or any rare disease that I know that has a cure right now. And when I went to Cure SMA, in US, I was really overwhelmed with emotions. I went there and I saw type 1 kids walking and on clutches. And we thought that that child was actually type 2 or type 3. And both of us could only imagine to say that, why are our babies in Malaysia dying? And our child is not given the access without even knowing what the child can do having Spinraza. The kids are actually rolling in a wheelchair and they're thriving. Mm-hmm. And in Malaysia, kids and babies are passing away.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back and continue the discussion. We want to find out from Katsha and Suki what else came out of Cure SMA, which is a conference that they attended to. I mean, it's Disneyland in Anaheim. And some of the key areas perhaps that we should focus on. I also want to know whether or not if these so-called gene therapy and Spinraza are administered to older children, older people, will that actually make a difference to the SMA and how it's presenting? So that's coming up next after the market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. We're discussing spinal muscular atrophy, which is a rare disease, a rare genetic condition, a condition where, parents carry two genes, which, are not terribly behaving itself. So you inherit this.
That's one way to describe it.
Yes, really not behaving itself. It's a genetic condition that affects about 1 in 6,000 to 10,000 babies who inherit this gene that's not behaving itself. It sort of affects production of a protein called SMN, which, works the motor neurons and the messaging to the muscles. Mm-hmm. And when that is impaired, you find that your muscles start to waste away. And so it's a genetic wasting disease. In the studio with us, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, and mothers, Yap Suk Yi, mother to Brandon, who's 9 years old, who has type 2 spinal muscular atrophy, and Kat Shah, who has two children who had SMA type 2 as well. Do you see more type 2s in Malaysia, or is there a mix of both?
In the research that I shared earlier, there are 50% type 1, about 25%. Percent type 2 and the rest are type 3 and type 4. So that is not far from the worldwide statistics. So predominantly it's still type 1.
Type 1, okay, yes. Which is the most severe condition of SMA. Mm.
But I'm sure there are many that are undiagnosed, so that number could be quite different.
Okay.
And I also want to stress that in Malaysia, the types has been, some of it categorized quite inaccurately. Right now this has changed to more so on a non-sitter, sitter, and standers. So I think the physicians really need to look into what is the category right now. It's just not based on the number of copies of SMN2, but it's the ability, the last ability that you could do before, symptoms
got shown. Worse.
Yeah, got worse.
The research that I'm reading, all of it seems very doom and gloom. Children seem to be, passing on very young. But, it seems like, they're doing better than what I've been reading. Am I correct?
Well,
I suppose with more and more that you know about the condition, what do you think?
Yes, the landscape for SMA has changed so much. I mean, it is no longer, I would say that in US or other countries that has access to treatment, that nowadays the doctors should not be saying that there is no treatment for SMA. You can't do anything, go home and love him more. But in Malaysia, I think it's still the same. And I would say for type 1 babies, palliative care is still the option to go.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. But, there is some hope. We know that the drugs are out there now.
Yes.
Yes.
We are very hopeful.
We just need to push, our people to bring it in for, to be accessed by everyone. Dr. Azlina, what sort of gene testing is available for couples today?
Well, especially I think if they've had children with SMA, or if they have a family member who has SMA, or nieces or nephews who have SMA, then they can they are recommended to go get tested if they want to know. There are local genetic testing services, or sometimes the doctors send the blood samples overseas to get tested. But yes, it is definitely available if they want to know.
Is it widely available or on just certain places, hospitals perhaps?
Yeah, it's right now I would say all the public hospitals would know where to refer to. But in private settings, yes, that is available.
So you can do it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think the results come back in about 6 weeks or so.
Yeah. Or less. Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, with the both of you, do you think parents should test before?
Just
even definitely. Getting married?
Yes, definitely.
So you are aware of it?
Now I am aware of it.
Yeah. I mean, as in, yeah. So
After the conference. Yeah, this is what Kasha has said. I mean, as you heard earlier, Kasha was a person who doesn't want to know anything about SMA, and she just moved on. But after attending Cure SMA, she's seen the possibilities, and she has seen, and she has learned so much more about SMA. Her mindset in caring for SMA is different now. So I think that's really important for us as parents or even as patients to really take things into our own hands to say and learn more about your own disease or your own condition or your child's condition. There's a lot that can be done. Don't listen to say that there's nothing can be done.
Mm-hmm. Kasha, what did you take away from the Cure SMA conference in the US?
A lot, actually. Everything was very inspiring, you know. Their stories, their experience keep me motivated. And I think everything, I see all the parents, they have very, you know, I adore their...
can-do attitude.
Yes, which I don't think I can find it here. And then the way they treat their children, it was very amazing. You know, if aquatic therapy, you know, they are doing ventilation, feeding and suction in the pool.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah. We saw a few child who's totally non-ambulatory in their being tracked. They have the oxygen, they have the suction machine, they have the feeding tube, not just, you know, just moving around in the hotel, but we actually have an aquatherapy session. So they were in the pool with us. This is not seen in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And for them, it's totally, their can-do attitude is so admirable.
I mean, you're talking about them in the US with the can-do attitude. The both of you are sitting in front of me with a huge can-do attitude. It's just different.
Yeah.
It's coming through very differently, that's all. I mean, you know, I suppose Americans in that side of the world are more vocal and, you know, that kind of thing. And you just, you know, doing your thing. And that is huge can-do attitude. And there's another message here. Thank you so much to the two mums for sharing your stories with us. You're strong women, your mums with superb supportive families.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you go. That's another message there. So Cure SMA conference, what are you going to do about it after this? I mean, are you going to help parents with what you've learned from the Cure SMA conference?
Yes. I mean, we learned so much. And one of the things that we noticed that we take home a lot, there were a lot of workshops. We couldn't even decide which one to go, but we had to prioritize. So one of it is grieving. So Kasha actually attended a workshop, which is part one and part two, on how to deal with grief, the passing of a child, which I think is very important. In Malaysia, and because of our cultural issue and religion, a lot of grieving issues and all that, they are actually, you know, just put aside. And when you lost a child, everybody just learned to deal with it. That's it. There is no professional help. There is no proper support system to help families like that. Having lost 6 babies last year, SMA babies, and now 2 or 3 this year, beginning of the year, all the parents are just looking at another parent for support. Where is the support for this the grieving parents? So I think that is very important. And we will actually assign Kasha, because she went to the workshop, and we're going to carry and organize such workshops for parents. Ah. And also because there were a lot of researchers and the industry people were there, I managed to see all the pharma, the industry partners, and we hope that we can actually can proceed further to bring the treatment to Malaysia.
Okay, so dealing with grief was one takeaway. Mm. Any other areas?
on how to manage in terms of orthopedic care and respiratory care. I think that is also something that we can actually bring home. And the doctors there are so supportive. They have actually agreed to say, speak to the doctors here, and they can even do video conferencing if you want, and to link up with them and to learn more.
So I think as well, you know, here perhaps some of the guidelines on how you care and manage the children, especially for the type ones, and especially when the type twos, for example, come to the hospital, and what they recommend that the parents can do at home, you know, in cases when they get infection or if they have some breathing problems. I think that has to be relayed, right? Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, that's not being properly conveyed to the family. So if the children do go through distress, then that actually causes the condition to worsen, and then it's very difficult to come back when it goes too far.
Okay. And the neurologist also mentioned that if they need to speak to any neurologist in Malaysia, they're more than happy to tell or share their experience and their knowledge and how SMA has changed.
Question here, if we suspect our child is having SMA, what is the right way to notify the doctors without sounding like Google Doctor?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, that is not...
Take it into your own hands.
To the mother or mom who's asking that, I did that with my Pete. I said, these were the symptoms I noticed, and I Google, and can you please proceed with something, do a blood test. My take home here is, at the end of the day, parents need to take action. You need to advocate for your child. You need to decide. And you are the voice for your child. So there is nothing wrong to sound like a Google doctor, because it is time for the doctors and the patients or parents to work together.
Mm. Katsha, your message?
To me, it's loving and caring parents can make a different choice. So you have to be responsible to your child and learn more about your child.
Dr. Azlina?
Well, my very short message would be, you know, for members of public, you know, who are listening to this show, you know, if you're wondering again what you can do, you know, volunteer to help out the community, volunteer to help out the associations and societies. Because they're small communities, but they're mainly driven by the parents and the families who are also needing to take care of their children. And so they also need our support. So please, please do volunteer, because, you know, all rare disease families need help.
So Edmund and I, we also started a non-profit organization called We Care Journey. So if anyone out there would like to know more about SMA, find us in Facebook, We Care Journey, or log into our website, wecarejourney.org.
Okay. You know, ladies, I don't know what to say. I'm actually lost for words. But all I can say is, you know, the both of you are just amazing.
Thank you
for joining us and sharing your story with us. That was Yap Suk Yee and Sharatul Azma Shamsuddin, Katsha, and Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, you know, speaking to us about spinal muscular atrophy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.